The following program is brought to you by Winthrop University Hospital. It's the weekend. Be good to yourself. It's Katz's Corner with Dr. Aaron Katz and Dr. Philippa Cheatham, where you can get simple, straightforward answers to your questions about health, from diet and supplements to lifestyle changes. To reach Dr. Katz and Dr. Cheatham, call 800-848-WABC. Now, live on 77 WABC, the chairman of urology at Winthrop University Hospital in New York, with co-host Philippa Cheatham, attending in urology at Winthrop University Hospital, here is Dr. Aaron Katz.
Hello. Good morning, Mike. Good morning, everyone in the studio, and thank you. Welcome, everyone, to Katz's Corner here on WABC Radio. Little glitch there. Good morning, Philippa. How are you?
Third time lucky you were live on the air. Wakey-wakey,
right.
Mikey.
Wow. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to WABC Radio and Katz's Corner. I'm your host, Dr. Aaron Katz. My co-host is in the studio, Dr. Philippa Cheatham, and we are live at 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-WABC. How are you, Philippa, this morning?
I'm good. You had time to practice your radio voice there.
Yes,
nice,
a couple of times. A little warm-up, yes.
It's like when you're at a concert and nobody claps. So right. Let's try that again.
Yeah, bring them back on. Well, I want to remind everyone that we are continuing, Philippa, as you know, our prostate cancer educational series. And we're going to continue even through the summer months, Philippa, in August. Our next meeting will take place on August 13th. Our associate, Dr. Jeffrey Schiff, will be our guest speaker, and he'll run a session called Ask the Expert Session, where questions and answers will be flying around about prostate cancer, and we can address all of your issues. So we hope to see you there. It'll take place at the Wellness Pavilion in 1300 Garden City, and if you are interested, you can give us a call at 516-663-2316.
Getting very good feedback, actually, from the prostate support
Absolutely.
Group. Many people have said how useful they've found the sessions. Also, although there's usually a lecture theme to it, it's a very free forum for asking questions and also meeting people with prostate cancer as well. A lot of patients say they find that very helpful. So it's a great meeting for you to come to if you have just been diagnosed with prostate cancer, and the session is actually run by Joel Nowak from Mayo Care, who has a wealth of experience, not just with early prostate cancer, but with advanced prostate cancer as well. So come along, 516-663-2316 to register, 516-663-2316.
This morning, Philippa, we're going to talk about our program at Winthrop University Hospital in the lung cancer screening program. And you and I, we've been both in medicine for you know, I've been in medicine for about 25 years now, and clearly smoking can cause so many issues, and it comes up a lot with our patients, not only in the clinic and urology. We see patients, smoking obviously is the number one cause. You and I just talk about this a lot, with bladder cancer, kidney cancer, but obviously it's well known to be the number one cause of lung cancer. And this morning, to help us talk about this, and I hope that by the end of this half-hour session, we will all be educated about lung cancer screening and the newest treatments on lung cancer. We've asked an expert at Winthrop. Our good friend, Dr. Jeffrey Schneider, is here. He's an associate professor at Stony Brook and is also the director of the lung cancer screening program at Winthrop, and is a medical oncologist and deals every day with thoracic oncology. He's well-trained, went to Brown undergrad. I was reading his bio last night. Very impressive. He went to Brown, then he went to Yale Medical School and trained, did a fellowship at Memorial, and now we are very thankful to have him here at Winthrop. So, good morning, Jeffrey. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good.
Great. And glad that you could be with us this morning. Thanks for coming in on an early Sunday. Tell us a little bit about the lung cancer screening. Who's eligible for that, and what have the results been for that?
Well, let me tell you a little bit about how a medical oncologist gets involved in lung cancer screening, because that's not the way it usually goes. We usually, you know, see the other end of cancers when the diagnosis is made and things are much more desperate. If you look at the mortality statistics for cancer in general, what you'll find is that prostate cancer, which you've just mentioned, is the number one diagnosed cancer in men. Breast cancer is the number one diagnosed cancer in women. But far and away, the most deadly cancer in men and women is lung cancer. It's actually responsible for more deaths than breast cancer, prostate cancer, colon cancer, and pancreas cancer all combined. So it is not only the most deadly cancer, but it's more deadly than the next four or five cancers combined. And if you ask yourself, you know, what is it that is responsible for that difference? By and large, it's that patients with lung cancer are diagnosed at a point where we can't cure them anymore. That is largely related to the fact that we don't have a way of making an early diagnosis by the presentation with symptoms, and we don't make an early diagnosis by screening. The other cancers, by and large, that we do much better with have screening programs in place. And the shame of it is that we know of a way to screen patients, to find their cancers early, and instead of having the majority of patients have incurable disease, we can diagnose them at a point when the majority of patients will have highly curable disease by virtue of being found early in its cancer evolution. But that program has been very, very slow to be adopted.
Why is that?
The history of lung cancer screening is mired by inadequate funds for screening programs, resistance to screening a stigmatized population. Obviously, you know, you wouldn't do mammography screening in men because men don't have a high enough incidence of developing breast cancer. You wouldn't do prostate cancer screening in women, and you wouldn't do lung cancer screening in non-smokers. Well, men and women are not stigmatized populations, but smoking is a stigmatized risk factor. And so the application of screening exclusively to a risk population that has a habit that is potentially preventable has made many reluctant to implement screening programs. And I think it's a tragedy of this whole lung cancer problem.
Jeff, before we talk about the screening program, can you just tell us a little bit about the typical presentation of somebody with lung cancer? I mean, how do they walk in the door for these patients that have not been screened?
Yeah, well, that's my life, basically. Every day I see people coming in. And the occasional patients who are presented present without screening who have early disease, because that does exist, tend to be patients who had a scan for some other reason and incidentally, you know, saved their life, which is another point that shows how valuable screening can be. But that aside,
when you say a scan, do you mean a chest X-ray or a CAT scan, or both?
Some imaging of the chest for, you know, done for other reasons. Sometimes they'll have an abdominal scan, and, you know, the upper cuts of the abdominal scan will show a nodule, and it's like they hit the lottery that they weren't supposed to have it, but they did. And you know, that's where the majority of early lung cancers without screening are diagnosed.
But the screening the screening program that we have at Winthrop involves a CAT scan.
A low dose CT scan, which means that the amount of radiation exposure, because that's always brought up as an issue, the amount of radiation exposure is comparable to, if not less than, the amount of radiation exposure that is involved with a mammogram. So the radiation exposure is no greater than what is already implemented with another screening test that's been well adopted.
And do you have to use the intravenous dyes, the contrast, for this?
There's no intravenous injection. There's no oral component to it. And the length of the scan is several seconds. It's a single breath hold. You go in a machine, you hold your breath, they do the scan, and you're out. It's frighteningly simple.
Wow.
I wonder how many people can hold their breath to do if you're a
especially
heavy smoker.
If you're a heavy smoker.
You say a single breath hold. How difficult is that, Jeff?
We haven't had a single person who couldn't do that. That has not been a barrier
news.
At all. Yeah,
that's good news.
In fact, they've talked about changing. You know, as we alluded to already, these programs will be adopted because the evidence is so very, very compelling. Compared to any other screening program, the opportunity to save lives is unparalleled. But once we mass develop these screening analogous to what we're doing with mammography, colonoscopy, it's envisioned that people will walk into what looks like an old telephone booth, and they'll stand in there and have their scan done. For those of you who can remember what an old telephone booth actually was.
I guess one of the concerns that, you know, Philip and I have seen with prostate cancer screening is that, you know, there's no blood test for lung cancer screening, correct? I mean, there's no blood test, so.
There actually are several that are in development to try to complement lung cancer screening. None that are approved, recognized, or ready for prime time, but there are actually a good number of blood test panels that are being used. And the idea of those would not be to replace a CAT scan, but because one of the issues with CAT scans is that we often find small, insignificant nodules, this would be a way of telling which nodules are the ones that really need to be gone after.
Exactly. So the question, you know, with PSA comes up is, okay, we get a PSA, it's elevated, we have to biopsy it. So now someone who has a long history of smoking, I guess you have to be a smoker for a few years to be approved by insurance carriers to get into this?
Yes. The amount of smoking that has been defined is what's called 30-pack years of smoking, which is one pack per day for 30 years, a half a pack per day for 60 years. But in other words, you multiply the two and you wind up with the number 30.
So you go through this program, and if the insurance carriers, they sound like most of them are paying for it, which is great. And I'm glad to hear that, especially during the era of the Affordable Care Act. So we do these scans and we see a lung nodule. And like unlike a prostate, you just biopsy it right there. I mean, do patients... I guess what I'm concerned about is there are these unnecessary procedures secondary to the screening that would have to be
absolutely.
Done.
Absolutely. It's a great question. It's one of the things that put people on pause before we had the data. The incidence of finding an abnormality on a CAT scan in this smoking population, the eligible smoking population, is about 1 in 4, which sounds alarming. However, the huge majority of those nodules don't require anything more than a one-year follow-up CAT scan, which is the same follow-up as would be required if you had nothing on your scan. So the real question in my mind, if you're going to talk about what's referred to as the so-called false positives, is what's the likelihood that an individual is going to go in for a scan and is going to have a procedure that is associated with a complication when they didn't have lung cancer. The chances of that happening are less than 1 in 2,000, whereas the chances of having one's life saved by virtue of having the scan done is less than 1 in 200. So, and the complications that we're referring to are most frequently a puncture of the lung that is seen on scan but that requires no intervention.
Fantastic information. If you're just tuning in at 7:15 in the morning here on Katz's Corner, Dr. Cheatham and myself, Dr. Aaron Katz, and we're talking with our wonderful guest, Dr. Jeffrey Schneider, who runs the lung cancer screening program at Winthrop University Hospital and is also the director of the thoracic oncology program. We have a few questions. We have a few people on the line, Philippa, that want to ask you some questions, Jeffrey. And if you have a question, you can call 1-800-848-9222. Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Okay, it is a great show. And, of course, if you live in New York City for the first 30, 40 years of your life, I wonder what your lungs would look like anyway if you didn't smoke.
That's a good point, Larry. Yeah, go ahead.
And also, obviously, with an MRI or a CAT scan, I know the CAT scan is more with the lung cancer. I mean, you put anybody under CAT scan, the other organs, if they're in that area, are going to show up. So you could, with a guy who's reading that CAT scan or the MRI, is going to, if they're on the money, they'll pick up other stuff. That's important to note, too. And I also wonder about the MRI, because you hear so many ball players are going under these MRIs. Is it pick up soft tissue and bone together? And plus, I'd like to also add one other thing. We hear so many commercials now. I know there's a lot of competition with you guys. But how about the big cancer research centers being a little more, take the top guys like you guys and sharing more information? Maybe we could get a little bit more out. I know there's egos involved, but we can get a little more out of the, obviously, all the work that's done in the studies and the clinical trials.
Great points, Larry. Let's see what Jeff has to say.
Larry, you're a great caller. Fantastic.
Yeah, fabulous.
All right,
Lots of energy
Schneider, what
there.
You think?
Thanks. I hope I can get all your points. So the first thing you alluded to is that yes, there are individuals who are appropriately deemed at risk for lung cancer by virtue of where they live or what they've been exposed to outside of direct smoking, who should qualify for lung cancer screening. And ultimately, what needs to be done is algorithms that incorporate these other risk factors, because it's not really about whether you smoke 30 pack years or 29 pack years or whether your age is 50 or 49. What it's really about is what's your risk going into the test. If your risk meets a certain level, then the test is going to have a payoff. The risks can be calculated even for patients who are non-smokers. Rarely will non-smokers have the risk level calculated at the same level as smokers to justify screening. But ultimately, an algorithm that calculates risk could incorporate other factors and be used to screen patients or individuals who may not qualify based on a smoking history alone.
What about his question about MRI versus CAT scan, Jeff?
Yeah,
that's a good question.
CT scan is the imaging modality that's been validated for lung cancer screening. The chest is easier to pick up non-calcified nodules on a chest CT. MRI obviously has the advantage of even less or no issue of radiation exposure, but it's a much longer test, more cumbersome, more expensive, and expense is a big factor here, because we're not talking about screening a small number of individuals. We're talking about potentially screening 15-20% of the adult population who meet these risk criteria.
Larry, are you a smoker?
Okay, Larry's gone. I'm sorry. Well, that was a great question, Larry, and thanks for tuning in. And you know, we see here that Schneider has so many educated people that are tuning in at 7 o'clock in the morning and want this health information. And what you're giving us here today, I mean, I don't see, if you've been a smoker, and we have this very active program here at Winthrop, I don't see the downside, because you're telling that you're giving the low dose radiation on the CAT scan and you're going to potentially pick up these lesions, and you are saving tremendous amount of lives by doing this.
It's incredible. I mean, the as I said before, the opportunity to impact on the deadliest of all cancers is there's nothing else on the radar
and you
that comes
see
close.
It, and you see this, like Philip and I see this with PSA screening. And I know that the U.S. Task Force has given this a grade B as in boy, a grade B rating, which means that it will be covered by insurance carriers.
Correct.
Okay. And it clearly needs to be done. Now, it's only recently that you've started doing these screenings, so we're not going to see the reduction in the death rate of lung cancer as of right now. It's projected that we will.
Well, it's been seen in order to see it, you need large numbers of individuals in a randomized study. So we see it in the National Lung Cancer Screening Trial, which is the only randomized study that has been published and with adequate numbers to demonstrate the benefit. And so it's been seen with follow-up. Now, that study actually is an underestimate of the benefit of lung cancer screening for a variety of reasons, but it nonetheless shows the numbers that I told you, that if you screen approximately 200 individuals, you'll save a life.
I've got two questions for you, Jeff. First question is, let's say you're 60 years of age and you've never smoked, but you got married when you were in your 20s and you've spent the last 40 years living with a partner who's a smoker of 20 plus a day, smokes like a chimney, you've, you know, spent 40 years living with a heavy smoker, are you eligible for screening or not?
Are you eligible for divorce?
Not yet. What I alluded to before is not incorporated into screening algorithms, and we really don't have a very, very good way of quantifying the passive smoking exposure risk.
Never mind divorce. You probably could sue your partner in New York City for them.
Especially if you get the lung cancer.
Absolutely. And my second question is, you know, if you're a heavy smoker and you turn up for this screening and you're given good news that all is well on your CAT scan, I mean, it's controversial, but do people say, well, that's great, I'm fine, I can carry on smoking? I mean, what information do you give people, education about stopping smoking? And do you think that the screening gives people the green light to carry on smoking and not address the big problem that if you actually continue to smoke, your risk? It's a great question.
It's been brought up as a potential argument against lung cancer screening. What the data shows in the screening programs is that smoking cessation actually increases. That's number one. Number two is the majority of the people that we're screening are former smokers. So not an issue for them. And number three is there's a teaching moment here with screening, and we do incorporate smoking cessation advice and direction to all individuals who are still smoking that come into to the program. But what the data shows, and I think we need to be clear about this, is that the likelihood of stopping smoking is greater for individuals who undergo a lung cancer screening program if they're smoking on initiation.
What about marijuana smoking? You've been in the field for a while. Now that, you know, these several states and others are probably going to follow with the legalization of marijuana, is there a risk there?
There is not a well-established risk. I guess the ability to quantify
a couple
exposure.
Of guys just took a big, deep breath there. Woo, thank God. Right? I'm sure there's a couple listeners out there.
Well, I suspect that...
Hey, man, great news. Pass the joint.
I don't know that that's really the answer. I'm saying that it's not as well documented. I suspect that inhaling smoke into your lungs on a regular basis of almost... any sort is not going to be a good thing.
Yeah.
But the...
you're not taking as many puffs typically anyway, you know? Yeah. I mean, with a cigarette you take, I don't know how many puffs, with marijuana you one or two.
Right. Not my expertise, but certainly something that as marijuana becomes more accepted, it's going to be more studied and we'll be able to look in on those sorts of things.
I mean, how do you break through the fact that most people know that smoking causes lung cancer, and we see this all the time on adverts, on cigarette packets, and so often it's like the message has almost been bandied around too much. Yeah, we all know smoking causes lung cancer. How do you get through to patients? How do you target a new angle to really hit home? I mean, you see on TV sometimes these commercials show you autopsy lungs in a specimen jar full of nicotine and tar. And even that, if you're a heavy smoker, even seeing pictures like that doesn't hit home.
Or there's some recent commercials that show you guys that are just, you know, with a tracheostomy. And I can't even watch those commercials.
Well, that's what they're intended to do. No, don't get my message wrong. If we could do only one thing to address the lung cancer problem, smoking cessation would lead the way. But we don't have to just be satisfied with one thing. Lung cancer screening is the second most important thing that we can do. It's the only thing that we can do for people who have already stopped smoking, and it complements smoking cessation in many, many ways.
You know, smoking is one of the major risk factors for men with sexual dysfunction, with impotence. I think they should put that on the warning label. Smoking this pack of cigarettes may cause you to have sexual problems.
No, it should say smoking kills your erections, period.
Smoking kills your erections. That's a new campaign. We have just a few minutes left. We're talking with Dr. Jeffrey Schneider, who runs the lung cancer screening program at Winthrop University Hospital. If you want more information about the screening, you can call 516-663-4658. That number again is 516-663-4658. 4658. And Dr. Jeffrey Schneider also runs a number of clinical programs for men and women with lung cancer, those patients that it's beyond the lung and it's spread. Tell us, Dr. Schneider, what's new? I know you run a very amazing immune therapy program at Winthrop for these patients with metastatic disease.
Yeah, so in the final minutes, I'm going to tell you about what really takes most of my time as a practicing medical oncologist, and that's the other piece of why lung cancer is so deadly is that once it's advanced, the treatment options have been historically quite dismal. Chemotherapy has a very, very modest impact on the course of lung cancer. Fortunately, we now have a influx of new and exciting treatments. There's a realm of treatment for lung cancer patients that's referred to as targeted therapies, and the targets are popping up left and right as we understand the genetic makeup of lung cancer better and better. So there is a wealth of opportunity. Basically, every lung cancer patient's tumors get checked for genetic abnormalities, and those abnormalities then suggest whether or not they can be candidates for targeted therapies. We're into the third generation of some of these treatments, so they're getting better and better. But what you alluded to and what I didn't want to leave out is one of the real exciting things going on in not only in lung cancer but in medical oncology in general is recognition of what we refer to as immunotherapy. It's been known for a long time that individuals who have compromised immune systems, HIV patients who are transplant and are their immune systems are suppressed by medications have an higher incidence of developing cancers. It's been observed that cancers where the immune system has some evidence of attacking it have more favorable outcomes. To turn that around and develop therapies has been a big challenge for a long time. But recognition now of what prevents the immune system from recognizing a tumor as foreign, the so-called immune checkpoints, is a huge avenue now in cancer therapy in general and in lung cancer therapy. And for advanced lung cancer patients, this appears to be not only another opportunity for treatment, but perhaps the only opportunity for a meaningful and long-lasting response to treatment.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, but the drug out there, nivolumab, that I think you're using for lung cancer, I mean, it's also, there's big trials going on in kidney cancer, and the data's actually very encouraging with these immunotherapies, and also for bladder cancer and lung cancer. It's a very exciting time, isn't it, in cancer treatment?
Absolutely. So melanoma and kidney cancer historically have been the two cancers where immunologic techniques have had some play. It was very surprising that these therapies would actually work in lung cancer, and they do.
Just so in the final few minutes, are there any holistic treatments or nutritional? You talk about immune therapy. Is there anything that you can take, a vitamin or supplement, that will reduce your risk of lung cancer? Any evidence for that or no?
Not that I'm aware of, but the immune therapies are available at Winthrop through investigational approaches. They are lights out in terms of what they're doing for some lung cancer patients. About 1 in 4 lung cancer patients will have dramatic responses to these drugs, and
none of these are FDA approved yet.
They're not, but the expectation is that in probably the second quarter of 2015, we'll start to see some
but
of these drugs approved.
They are available at Winthrop.
They're available at Winthrop.
All right. Well, if you want to get in more involved in this, if you have a loved one or yourself and you're interested in these immune therapies, it's 516-663-4637. That's 516-663-4637. Unfortunately, Dr. Schneider, that's the end of the show. You were a terrific guest, right, Philip? It's
absolutely.
Fantastic
anyone who's listening, put your cigarettes down the toilet.
Absolutely. All right, everyone. Well, tune in next week. We hope to hear you every Sunday. Tune in. This is Dr. Aaron Katz.